And so obviously, I think that the way we think about race historically really affects how we think about race now. And so making those critical analytical moves, saying what is race, how is it doing, how do people imagine it, and why does that have material consequences? I think those are really important questions. And I didn't see Jewish studies making them as often as they should, as it should, or in all of the places where it would really help analysis.
That was Indiana University's Professor Sarah Imhoff talking about Judaism and race in the United States and how race has historically been discussed in the field of Jewish studies. We're featuring Professor Imhoff today on this episode of Religion and Race in America, Scholars Speak, a podcast written and produced by students at Smith College.
Hello, I'm Rachel.
I'm Sydney.
And I'm Katie.
We're your hosts for this episode. Our podcast investigates the ways in which religion and race have interacted in American history, and we do so by talking to some of the leading scholars in the field who have written on the subject.
Today, we're talking to Professor Sarah Imhoff, Associate Professor of Religion at Indiana University. Imhoff's work connects lived identities, such as race and gender, with religion, especially within the field of Jewish studies. Notable publications include her 2017 book, Masculinity and the Making of American Judaism, and an influential journal article titled Women and Gender, Past and Present, A Jewish Studies Story.
We asked Professor Imhoff what she hopes to accomplish with her own scholarship on race and religion in America. She explained that she hopes to encourage scholars in the field of Jewish studies to think critically about race. She gave the example of the story of, quote, how Jews in America became white, and told us she thought that was sort of a dodgy claim. We asked her to elaborate.
So people will tell this in a couple of different ways. One version is, oh, in the U.S., by the way, the U.S. is always the underlying place that this is happening, because racial formations are really different in different places, but there's like this overall narrative that magically Jews became white. Not magically, but lots of people think, oh, in the 1950s, when Jews moved to the suburbs, they're part of white flight, and this is part of how Jews really become white. And that's not a false story, but the problem goes way back earlier. Racial formations, when Europeans come to the Americas in the beginning, there's not a strong sense of white versus black in the way that we have it now, but there is a clear sense that there's something biological, or we might think racial, about Jewishness, but it's not necessarily racial. And you can see that because later in the colonies, in the Latin American and Caribbean, and what becomes the US, you can't enslave Ashkenazi Jews. And when people talk about allowing white people in, like the laws about, are we gonna allow white people in our colony, Jews are assumed to be under white people. So if we wanna say in the 17th and 18th century, Jews are basically white. Now, it doesn't mean they don't experience exclusion or anti-Semitism. They do, but they're not necessarily under racial ideologies. So it's not that the difference is racial, it's that it's religious or kind of national, like we might think peoplehood, that kind of thing. So the problem with those when Jews became white is that they're historically really just a kind of narrow vision, and if you zoomed out, you would see a much more complicated landscape about how race changes and how Jews themselves imagine themselves on the racial landscape, and how others see Jews in a racial landscape also changes. I think the teleological language is like historically and contemporarily unhelpful and inaccurate. Like, we don't live in a world where there's progress and like people become white, or like each group gets added to whiteness as if that's a good thing or something, you know.
Next, we asked Professor Imhoff who influenced her work in race and religion. She named a few scholars, but we wanted to highlight one in particular.
I've also been thinking lately about Judith Weisenfeld's religio-racial identities or religio-racial groups. I think that's a really helpful term. Obviously, she uses it in a variety of cases, but mostly with respect to African-American and other Black Americans. But it's one of those things that turns out to be really helpful for people who are thinking about Jews, because there's this, oh, are Jews an ethnicity? Are they a religion? In this case, yes. So I think remembering that religion and race, especially in the US context, it's different, and the ways that race plays out in the racial landscape is really different in other places too. But especially in the US, Weisenfeld, I think, has created a term and description of that term that is really useful for thinking about the ways that religion and race are related without saying, oh, well, basically they're the same thing, or it's always just one thing and there are two parts of it, or something like that.
A lot of Professor Imhoff's work deals with filling in the gaps of the Jewish studies story and exploring marginalized groups. So we asked her what she views as missing from, but important to, the scholarly dialogue around religious and racial constructions.
I'm not sure that it's missing, but I'll say something that, in fact, I'm sure it's not totally missing, but I'll say something that I think it would be helpful if people thought about more, which is other embodied conditions like gender and disability. So again, it's not that no one's doing this, but it is entirely possible that you can write a whole book about race and religion and not really talk about either one of those significantly. Like, you couldn't do it reasonably and never talk about women, but you might never think about gender as a category or as an analytical category, or imagine why it was important that the men were men and women were women and what they were doing and people who didn't fit a binary and things like that. So I would say I think those embodied conditions sometimes play bigger roles than we imagine. For example, if we think about the way that racial constructions work, or even that racial stereotypes work, they often draw on either gender and sexuality. So think like the idea of the sexually aggressive Black man, or or disability. So like this race of people is less intelligent, or those kinds of, and not even, you know, can go beyond less intelligent, right? Like this race of people is really deficient. So I think that the way that those conversations intersect are really important. And so I guess I would like to see it more. It's not to say that it's totally missing, but that I think a lot of scholarship would really be enhanced by attending to those other kinds of embodied difference, because they're so important for how racial constructions happen, and how people who are called into being by those racial constructions experience them too.
Professor Imhoff isn't just concerned about what stories are being told by Jewish studies scholars. She's concerned with whose voices are telling these stories too. She uses a lot of her writing to point out the obvious gender disparities within the field. In 2018, she and Susanna Heschel wrote a bombshell article in the Foreword titled, "Where Are All the Women in Jewish Studies?" In it, she writes, quote, "The extraordinary irony is that the field of Jewish studies struggled since the early 19th century for its place at the academic table. Jewish studies scholarship is still too often ignored within the academic world, and treated by colleagues precisely the way women are treated within Jewish studies," end quote. We asked her to follow up on this and explain why she thinks this gender disparity exists in the field.
Jewish studies is, I think, not necessarily worse than other humanities and social science areas, but it has some of its own distinctive features, which I think make it worth looking at. So like one of the examples that I usually give, and here's a good example of how race and gender both matter, is that there's this kind of strong sense of, if you imagine the person who is the expert on the Jewish text, you imagine an old guy with a beard, right? And you imagine an old white guy with a beard. And it's not that, you know, all scholars run around imagining that everybody should be an old white guy with a beard, but there is a kind of default that's the kind of person who is an expert at these texts. It's not entirely false either, because In Orthodox circles, even today, it's boys who are taught Hebrew and Aramaic much more than girls. Now, some of that's changing, and more girls are receiving more education, but the idea of reading Talmud, it's an important thing religiously and culturally for many Orthodox Jews to have their boys be able to do that and to grow up doing that. And it's a less important thing to have girls do that. And so what happens when you get to, you know, graduate school and being a professor is that there are a lot of men who have had these skills beforehand. And so women or people of color don't look like many of the people who are expected to show up in those religious spaces. And that kind of bleeds over into academic spaces where there's still the assumption, not least because many of the older professors are still white men. So there's the assumption that that's what authority looks like. So this is one of the ways that it's not, I could also talk about three dozen other things that Jewish studies shares with all other disciplines because they're shared, part of the shared culture. Like we could think about women and caregiving, we could think about women and assertiveness and how that actually kind of penalizes you in the workplace, right? All of those things are also true in Jewish studies, but I just figured I would mention the one that makes Jewish studies a little bit distinctive. There are others too that make Jewish studies a little distinctive, but that one is a really clear one. And I think demonstrates how there are kind of baked in assumptions about what authority looks like and how those hurt women, particularly women and people of color, but also broadly people who don't grow up Jewish. So so non-Jews also have a harder time in many corners of Jewish studies for those reasons.
We wanted to follow up with Professor Imhoff and ask her to elaborate on why she thinks Jewish studies is underrepresented in academia, much like how women are underrepresented in Jewish studies.
In the US landscape, Jews are the really familiar other. So if most scholars feel like they could talk about, most scholars in, say, religious studies, feel like they could talk about Christianity in the US, it's the kind of dominant group. And then if we want to imagine the other, we might say, oh, we can talk about American Muslims, or we can talk about Buddhism in the US, or we can talk about new religious movements. But Jews are kind of in that in-between space where people just sort of assume they know because they're this like Judeo-Christian, like, oh, we know Jews because they're kind of like Christians. And so they don't play a role, they don't play quite the primary other role. As they might if you were studying Europe, but they also don't, they're not central in the way, or have numerical dominance, say, the way American Christians might. So there you can get a kind of falling between the stools there, where people don't feel like Jews are, maybe don't feel like they're that interesting, or probably more accurately feel like they already know about Jews without actually already knowing much about Jews.
In her book, Masculinity and the Making of American Judaism, Imhoff dedicates a chapter to discussing an interesting early 20th century phenomenon. American Jewish men identified with Native Americans and tied together their history, hoping this association would make them seem more tied to the American land and make them seem like brave frontiersmen. However, they were always careful not to associate themselves too closely, not wanting the Jewish community to be seen as primitive. We asked Professor Imhoff to explain some of the big takeaways from the story and how this work of addressing disparities relates to racial disparities within the field.
I think that it's a kind of backdoor way of reminding us that Jews and Jewishness are partaking in this racial discourse in a much wider American sphere. And that if we want to understand Jews and Jewishness well, we should pay attention to how Jews imagine other groups. And also, something I didn't do in that book, but I think is really important, is how Jews were imagined by them. So how do Native Americans think about Jews? Or do they ever think about Jews? So I think those things are crucial. And one thing I would note is that having a wider or more diverse set of scholars in Jewish studies would help us along in this way too. So having people who have backgrounds in Native American history would be really helpful. I only know of one Jewish studies scholar who does, and having people who themselves have different identities brings a variety of perspectives. So I think maybe one way to say this is that article shows a first step, a kind of baby step, but also really calls for more. I wish I could do more too, but calls for a wider, maybe shows the value of having more diverse and wider kinds of interests in and backgrounds for the people who do Jewish studies.
We asked Professor Imhoff what her next project will be, and the answer is that there's actually three.
I'm just finishing up a book on a woman named Jessie Samter, who was a queer disabled Zionist in the early 20th century. She's fascinating. And that book is a little bit creative. It's a non-standard biography, so it's not chronological. And it thinks about bigger questions as it goes along. So there's one chapter thinking about her life and religion, and one chapter thinking about her life and disability, and one chapter thinking about her life and queerness, et cetera. Then I'm working on a co-authored book with Susanna Heschel about women in Jewish studies that grew out of that article we wrote for the foreword, where we said, this is a real problem. And a lot of people responded, and we thought, oh, maybe we should write a book about this. Not only what does the problem look like, but what are possible ways we could change things to make the problem less bad? So that's a major contribution that I hope that book makes. Not that it's going to be a bullet-pointed list of things we need to do, but that it really wants to think about structural changes that we can make, ways that universities can operate differently, ways that different people can be encouraged to enter different areas, and then rather than the kind of we found a sexist man and we called him out and then like there we fixed the problem, except that doesn't fix the problem. I mean, sexist men shouldn't be sexist. They should stop doing things that are sexist, but we're not gonna fix the problem if we think that the problem is actually just a couple of bad apples who are spoiling it for everyone. We have a much bigger structural issues. And so thinking clearly about those structural issues and doing less kind of finger pointing and blaming and more thinking about what those structures are and how we might change them to be more equitable. And then the third project, which is still relatively new and there was going to be a lot of research on this in the past 6 months, but you know, since we all live at home now all the time, there hasn't been as much as I had hoped. And that's a broader kind of history of the present of Jews in the Americas, thinking about race and gender and law as three major categories. So that'll be thinking from contact to the present. So it's obviously not gonna be comprehensive in any possible way, but thinking about what different stories would we tell if we centered questions about race and gender and law in Jewish history rather than stuff like Jewish continuity or identity or how Jews fit into a US context. The book is very interested in imagining the Jewish world beyond the US. If you read a lot of the kind of standard one book narratives, you get a little bit of the Caribbean, like you get Brazil for a minute in the very beginning, and then you get a little bit of the Caribbean and then those disappear, like they're gone. And then you get like, you know, mostly the Northeast for a really long time. And then like you might get a little Chicago or California or Miami or something like that. But thinking about what does Jewish life look like across the Americas, specifically when we think about how race and gender matter, and also when we think about how law matters. So the relationship of religion and law is quite different in the Americas than it is in Europe. And yet a lot of our scholarship still sticks to the like secularization models from Europe, where what happens is things get transferred. But all of the stories are about monarchy and kings. And that's not true in the Americas. There's a different organization. There's a different way that people imagine those relationships. there's this great new book called Ecclesia that's written by three scholars, and they use the word church-stateness for thinking about those relationships in the Americas. And I think that's really compelling to think, oh, we have this political theology that's really Europe-based and we keep just applying it, but what would it mean to take those different organizations of church-stateness in the Americas seriously, especially for Jews who are often the first non-Christian people that legislators think about or that people making the rules think about. Of course, there are enslaved Africans who are many other religions, including Muslim, but they're not a primary concern for people who are making laws when they're thinking about what's the relationship of religion and the state by us. They're thinking, oh, these people are enslaved. Their religious difference doesn't really matter, or like is subsumed under their status as enslaved. But Jews end up being one of the major ways that people think about the relationship of religion and the government. Sometimes even before Jews actually show up, like the sort of, we can imagine, do we want Jews? Should Jews be able to vote? Should we encourage them to settle here? Like those kinds of questions too.
Professor Imhoff was able to touch on some really insightful ideas about race and religion in the U.S. We've learned so much about the history of Jewish Americans and their relationship with racial categories and Americanness through her work, and especially through the thoughts she shared with us today. She also brought up some great criticisms of how women are seen and treated in the field of Jewish studies, and how diversification of the field can make Jewish studies a stronger area of study. We look forward to her upcoming work on these really thought-provoking and important topics.
That concludes our episode for today. Special thanks to Sarah Imhoff. Also, thanks to Dan Bennett, Travis Grandy, and Yasmin Eisenhower of the Smith Learning, Research, and Technology team. And thanks to the Andrew Mellon Foundation that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College.
Thanks for listening to Race and Religion in America, Scholars Speak.